start talking on my own program? Nancy Skinner Show? It is the Nancy Skinner Show. On a Monday, it's me, Nancy Skinner, talking to John Krieger about the show today. Getting lots in store for you. Lots going on. Happy to be here. I hope everyone's well. 1-888-64-NANCY or 1-888-Nancy. Lots of that back and forth. And if you don't have those little letters on your phone, it's 1-888-646-2629. So what's coming up today? We're going to be talking to Howard Dean, Governor Howard Dean, about the healthcare initiative. They've sort of taken over the DFA, and Howard Dean, that's been obviously, having been a medical doctor, an important issue for him, and he's going to be nonstop on it. There's actually been some developments in healthcare. I'm understanding there's going to be a bill put out by early June in the Senate to start moving healthcare. So, whoa, here we go. Harry and Louise, get ready for it. We have to be prepped for that. And we'll be getting caught up on all of the political happenings over the weekend, the president finishing up his summit, the big deal with Chavez, the book, the politics, all of that. But before we do that, I have a new blog post, and I don't know if it's up yet, but if it's not, it will be shortly. Because I spent a lot of time thinking over the weekend about we had a show on Friday, and so I really thought about it, because it was like kind of a crazy day. What happened was I had James Boyce on, my boy toy, on Fridays. Okay, that's a joke. But the appearance of Janine Garofalo on Keith Olbermann it came up in conversation, and we were talking about tea parties. And she was on Keith Olbermann to talk about Tea Party. Now, I like Keith Olbermann. I love it. Watch it every night. And Rachel. And I just happened to be home from a meeting, and I turned it on, and I give my honest, one of the things I do on the show is I give my very honest impression of how things strike me. And I guess I was the first one who set off quite a wave. I remember seeing that woman on YouTube, Susan Doyle, is it? The Scottish sensation. And I played it on the show. Remember I said, what's funnier, what's more entertaining, I said, the YouTubers or the teabaggers? Well, now she's turned into a worldwide sensation. So I have a knack for spotting things that might somehow get comment. And I said that I thought Janine Garofalo was just a little bit over the top. And I think it's just that. I think she was, her comments were over the top. So what we did is, and I have a whole blog post on this, and I'm going to continue to talk about it a little bit because I have tons of email and phone calls. So obviously people are, I've touched a nerve, and that's good. And I spent a lot of time over the weekend thinking about that. But here it was, put it all in context. If you did not hear Janine on the program, they were doing the analysis. MSNBC had a lot of fun with the double entendre of the teabagging, which I thought was hilarious, and really hard-hitting commentary about, what's behind this, and lots of theories on what's behind this. So I thought it was pretty interesting. But then Janine came on and gave her 2 cents, like, right out of the bat. Keith just welcomed her in there. Boom, here it is.
But, like I said, Rush Limbaugh will go to his grave unfixed, human frailty. Let's go with human frailty. Yeah. It is human frailty that makes it be.
No. This is not the one from the other night. So the one I gave you from the other, that is a previous. She's appeared on the show many times. Do you know which one is Krieger from the racist? Maybe it's this one. Let's try this one.
But what is really, I didn't know there were so many racists left. I didn't know that. I because as I said, the Republican hyphen, the conservative movement has now crystallized into the white power movement.
Is that not a bad long-term political strategy? Because even though your point is, terrifying that there are that many racists left,
right,
the flip side of it is there aren't that many racists left.
But they're the minority. Literally, tens of people showed up to this thing across the country.
But if you spear your television network or your political party towards a bunch of guys who are just looking for a reason to yell at the black president, eventually you will marginalize yourself out of business, won't you?
Or at least no. There's no shortage. Here's what the right wing has in in there's no shortage of the natural resources of ignorance, apathy, hate, fear.
Yeah.
There, as long as those things are in the collective conscious and unconscious, the Republicans will have some votes. Fox News will have some viewers. But what else have they got? If they didn't do that, who's going to watch? You know, I mean, they've got they have tackled that elusive clam. You know, the clam demo. The 18 to 35 clam demo. Clan with a K demo. But, you know, who else is Fox talking to? I mean, what is it? Urban, older white guys.
Yeah.
And the girlfriend. And, you know, the women who suffer from Stockholm Syndrome again. There's a lot of Stockholm Syndrome is what I'm saying, ultimately. What else do you want?
So that was a piece of it. Here's another piece of that.
There is nothing more interesting than seeing a bunch of racists become confused and angry at a speech they're not quite certain what he's saying. It sounds right to them, and then it doesn't make sense. Which, let's be very honest about what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about bashing Democrats. It's not about taxes. They have no idea what the Boston Tea Party was about.
That's right.
They don't know their history at all. This is about hating a black man in the White House. This is racism straight up. That is nothing but a bunch of tea-bagging rednecks. And there is no way around that. And, you know, you can tell these type of right-wingers anything and they'll believe it except the truth. You tell them the truth and they become, it's like showing Frankenstein's monster fire. They become confused and angry and highly volatile.
Mm-hmm.
That guy caused in them feelings they don't know, because their limbic brain, we've discussed this before, the limbic brain inside a right-winger or Republican or conservative or your average white power activist, the limbic brain is much larger in their head space than in a reasonable person, and it's pushing against the frontal lobe. So their synapses are misfiring. Is Bernie Goldberg listening?
Right.
Yeah, because Bernie might not have heard this when I said this the first time. So, Bernie, this is for you. It is a neurological problem that we're dealing with.
Okay, so... you know, what I did say was she was over the top. One of the comments I got is that she was a hater. But I had to go back and review exactly what she said. But clearly, she said on that show that the Republican Party has crystallized into the white power movement. And she talked about the limbic brain pushing against the front lobal area. And she said of all Republicans and conservatives. And so they're mentally deficient. Now, if that's just like some sort of humor and she's not to be taken seriously, you know, that's one thing. But I got so much response from people saying, that wasn't over the top. That's exactly right. And during the show, lots of calls and emails during the show. I got a different response over the weekend. But just think if the other, and I'm just going to challenge you a little bit here. If the other side said that all Democrats had a biological deficiency in their brains, doesn't that evoke another era of history when we say someone is inferior by their brains are inferior, there's something different about them as human beings? And that their brain, she said she's talked about it many times before, that the limbic brain pushes against the frontal lobe and all Republicans have this problem. It's a neurological problem. Now, I do agree with my own statements. I thought a lot about that. It's over the top because it starts to evoke images that aren't pleasant in history when we start labeling people like that. And then I got a bunch of response to the response and thought about it. So when we get back, I'm going to share that with you. Because there was a lot of discussion that happened. I figured, okay, bring it on. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-646-2629. Let us soul searching about who we are. Do we want to be just as bad as they are? And I thought about it, did a lot of my own soul searching, and I will bring it to you after this break.
I need you, and girl, I'm
the Nancy Kerr Show. After a period of reflection and let's see what it was, finding my Zen Lake Center about the whole dust up over Janine Garofalo, and I said she was over the top, and oh, you need to be over there, these people are all right. And I got pounded by it, but I got a lot of feedback over the weekend that I want to share with you. Before we do that, we're going to get some people jumped on the lines. We'll do that right off the bat. And Buffalo John is up first. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, good. I wanted to say about the comments of Janine Garofalo that she was saying basically people against Obama would be white Republicans. So that's to say, on the opposite side of that, without her saying it, that if 90% of people, of black people, voted for Obama, and not really a lot of black people showed up to protest government or for the Tea Parties, that means that she's basically saying that black people are Democrats. They're all Democrats, and they're all for Obama. As if,
say that again. Say that. Say that one more time.
She's basically saying that no black people are Republicans. She's just saying that black people are all basically Democrat and they're all for
Obama.
Well,
I think she went further though. I hear your point, John. But I think she went even further than that when
right,
she said
right.
that the Republican Party has crystallized into the white power movement. The white power movement, obviously,
well,
being
what
like
I mean,
a.
What I mean that's implied though is. Is what's implied on the that's not said is that black people didn't look at the issues and go for either Democrat or Republican. They're not going anything by issues. It's sort of an insult to them saying they're just flatly for Obama. So she's almost calling them racist. Either you would think that every black person was Democrat or that they just like Obama because he's black.
Well, that's a good analogy. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose you could say that the 90-some percent of African Americans vote Democratic. But
right.
does that make them hate, filled with hate and hating all white people? Or is it that they're drawn to that party?
Right. She's implying that either they're all drawn to that party, which is ridiculous, or they're just all not drawn to any party and they like him because he's black. So it's an insult to them, too. It's an insult to me. Who may not be for Obama, but it's an insult to them because you'd have to think to realize she's insulting them.
She insulted people big time. I appreciate your call, John. And I'm not saying that, and I'm as we'll put my post up. Sharon, go ahead and put my post up on the web. If you're there, I wrote it. We wanted to get you what I said, what she said, and where this leads to. But what I did not say that there isn't a draw that kind of event that sort of. Fear-mongering event doesn't draw racists out of the closet to come be there. I did not say that. But I said to start to say that all Republicans, it's a part of the white power movement and they have deficient or inferior physical bodies, their brains. That is, we got to call a spade when we on our side of the aisle. If that was said by a Republican, that all Democrats are physically deficient, that they are inferior human beings, and that's been used in history. When you objectify and label people, you dehumanize them, and it really doesn't get us where we want to go. Even if there are some elements of truth in which, you know, which party draws it, does it get us where we want to go? And I'm going to tie that into the president's comments in his South American trip. But Gregory is up next. Hi, Gregory.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. My comment about Janine, when I watched the show, was from a perspective of as a previous entertainer. I'm not that anymore. And I'm in psychology, and I do psychology, and I teach psychology. And I was looking at her as an entertainer, making comments. And I saw that over-the-top quality in her as just being that entertainer that when my actor friends tell stories, and often when I tell stories, too, they're very animated, number one. And number two, and I try not to do this anymore, they add a lot of stuff to it. They embellish and they throw in things just for dramatic purposes.
Okay, so I only have 10 seconds here. You think that was pure humor, right? Pure humor?
No, not at all. Not pure humor. I think that she embellished with a lot of humor.
Okay, Greg, hold on. Hold yourself on there because I've only got a couple seconds and we'll return on the Nancy Skinner Show. Skinner Show on a Monday, reflecting on Friday, actually. 1-888-64-NANCY, Nancy, I can't believe you just said that, or 1-646-2629. All right, here's what we're talking about. Janine Garofalo, I replayed for you her appearance on Keith Olbermann talking about the tea parties. And a big dust-up we had here on the show on Friday. Now, I said very clearly throughout the whole Tea Party discussion that I thought they were one faux. They were organized. They were AstroTurf events organized by Dick Armey and the whole lot trying to regain some momentum. Two, that I believe they tapped into a lot of real fear and anxiety on the part of people who are worried about losing their jobs. Everything's falling apart, and they scapegoat. These people are spending your money. That's why you're in the place you are. And if you are uneducated, that's easy to do. Three, I also said that they were there protesting. They had no idea that the protesting taxes, no marginal tax rates had been raised. And in fact, 95% of working Americans got a tax cut. And the idea of spending and protesting spending, where were they? We remember looking for George Bush. Where was he when he increased all that spending? This spending was necessary to prevent us from a depression. So obviously you're tapping into these events to a lot of fear and ignorance and uneducation and manipulation by the powers that be. And yes, in fact, there probably were people there, and who knows what numbers, that are just racist. But to go so far as to say that this was all this was about is Janine. Let me just preface this again. This is what she said. This is what all this about.
But what is really, I didn't know there were so many racists left. I didn't know that. I because as I said, the Republican hyphen, the conservative movement has now crystallized into the white power movement.
Is that
okay? So the Republican movement has crystallized into the white power movement. To go that far and for me to casually mention, I think that was over the top. It causes fury of calls from people who hate me now because I wouldn't go that far and condemn an entire group of people lest we become like them. Okay. And so I'm just going to, I got a call. I got an email. I'm going to share with you sort of crystallize my thinking on who I am and what I want to be. And it's going to be at nancyskinnerlive.com. If I just want to stir up the ranks and stir up and foment hate and get ratings, as Rush Limbaugh has, and as Glenn Beck, the Michelangelo of, building the Fear Obama statue. If I want to do that, that's pretty easy to do. I don't want to do that. That's not my purpose in life, is to go just make us into as big as haters as they are. And I'm not saying she is, but when you start to do that, you're walking down a very slippery slope because we're right on policy. I believe as a Democrat, we lose them. We lose thinking people when we just start calling names and labeling. We lose. Here, in a minute. I'm just going to read it right now. Here's the email I got. From Rick in Albuquerque. He said, Nancy, I got lots of them, but this one's really good. I'm probably everything that most of your listeners hate. Dyed in the wool Republican, social conservative, evangelical Christian, white male, work in the nuclear weapons arena. Okay, not my T1 audience, okay? Which is your most loyal base. For years, I listened to Rush, Sean, et al., but I started hunting for something different when I grew tired of their continual bashing of the left and their cutting off callers who had a different point of view. That's when I found Air America. It was interesting to hear the other side, but also disappointing because some were doing just the same things as their right-wing counterparts. I really wanted to understand what the world looked like through progressive eyes, and all I was hearing was a continual stream of bile being spewed out against people who held conservative ideals. Today, however, was wonderfully different. At one point on your show, you relayed a message from a listener promising to never listen to you again because you had something decent to say about Republicans. I thought your response about treating people well was great. That comment and all the calls leading up to it crystallized for me what I had been understanding at a subconscious level but could never put words on it until this afternoon. I don't believe that nuclear weapons, economic crisis, global warming, or any of those other things normally discussed in these shows are the greatest threat to our nation. The real threat is collective arrogance and selfishness. It dawned on me today that the host of every show on TV and radio focused on politics comes from the perspective of, I am right on everything I say, and the opposition is completely wrong. Maybe it's just all theater, in a sense, way to bump ratings. But I think it's more than that. Some of the folks who called into your show today had hearts full of hate. One guy would have been comical if the irony hadn't been so tragic. He complained about the Tea Parties being a cover for hateful white racists, even as every syllable he spoke was overflowing with his own poisonous hatred of the haters, who he was condemning. And it's just not on, on the liberal side of the aisle, you see. Much of what happens in conservative talk radio is callers genuflecting to right-wing dogma and getting the same kinds of verbal strokes of approval from the right-wing hosts and getting the same kinds of strokes and approval from the right-wing hosts that I hear being handed out by left-wing hosts to their cause. It struck me today that the whole lot of it is overflowing with arrogance and selfishness. If I believe that I am absolutely correct in every opinion I hold, if I believe that I have nothing to learn from someone with different opinions, if I don't take time to try to understand what the others believe and why, then I'm an arrogant fool. If I insist that our national leaders work only on the issues that I care about, then I am selfish. Okay, years ago he talked about Tip O'Neill and Reagan saying they fought like cats and dogs all day and had a drink in the bar afterwards. They generally respected one another. My fear is that our nation is a house deeply divided, and I wonder how much longer we can stand. If at the end of the day we can't be civil to one another when the debating is done, we should each be able to hold our own positions passionately, but should never allow these differences to... foment hatred. Calling each other idiot or mentally deficient simply because we don't see the things the same way must come to an end if we want our nation to regain its strength. More than anything, we need to grow big hearts and listening ears. We need to embrace humility. I am sure that I don't see things the way you do. Help me understand why you believe and why. I will see you as a fellow American, as my brother, and not as my enemy. Today I saw a glimmer of that in your comments. Keep it up. Encourage dialogue, not division, and I'll keep listening. I don't believe that the right is right on everything. There's much that's happened over the last few years that really disappoint me. I don't believe the left has a monopoly on truth. Maybe if we seek to understand more than we seek to be understood, we will be far better off. Rick in Albuquerque. Now, why was that interesting to me? Obviously, a white evangelical Rushbow listening weapons, nuclear weapons guy, you know, wouldn't normally even listen to my show. But he's listening here and we can begin this dialogue. And when President Obama took the book and shook Chavez's hand and he did point a finger at him and challenge him to a duel and call him mentally deficient, you know what? He wasn't talking to Chavez. He's talking to the people of Venezuela, who then say, you know what, these aren't our enemies. And when you can kind of overcome that, it's a different tact. It's called respect. And when we stop labeling, maybe some of the people that listen to Rush Limbaugh, like Die Hard, I mean, he's got way bigger audiences than us that buy all this stuff. Maybe there will be more Ricks in Albuquerque that'll say, you know what, at least you're respectful. I'm willing to listen to you. And then when we have to face these important conversations, we can get somewhere. But when we just do the same thing they do and say Republicans have crystallized in the white power movement, who's going to listen? Because if you consider yourself a Republican, you're just going to turn that channel. She's just, I'm part of the white power movement. I didn't know that. That's not my issue. My issue is whatever, you know, it's drilling or whatever. And so that's what I said over the top. I didn't say hater. I didn't say this or that. And I thought to myself, you know what? As much grief as I got, darn it, that's who I am, and I am different, and this is what I'm seeking to do, we're in times unparalleled with dangers, and so if we're ever going to learn to get along, that's what we got to do. So let's go to Janice, who's in Long Beach, California. Hi, Janice.
Hi, Nancy, and thanks for a wonderful program.
Thank you.
And you know what? On your theme music, I have grown to love it. I've listened to the lyrics more and more. And it's wonderful. So
trouble. You know, I'm a troublemaker. Yeah, I guess that's fitting for me.
I like that. It's a good kind of tongue-in-cheek, great theme.
Thank you.
Anyways, I kind of disagree with you, although I must say I generally agree with you in that language counts and that attitude counts. But I have to say I think Janine Garofalo might have been actually right. It kind of harkens back. Have you ever read any of John Dean's writings, any of his books? The scientific studies explaining a lot of this kind of what we on the left, to generalize, I'm sorry, But you kind of look at some of these right-wing people and wonder what on earth could they be thinking, even in the face of facts, that they just keep on chanting this crazy stuff. Some of them, you know, he explained, and he also quoted this information from the scientific studies that explained that a certain percent, like maybe almost around 30, don't quote me, it was around that, are authoritarian personalities, either in that they want to be the authority or that they want to follow authority. And no analysis exists. They just are that way. And in my...
See, even when you're saying they, do you distinguish at all, Janice, between those leaders who, see, in my view, they were brilliantly inventive of ways to get people to follow this failed political philosophy because it sounds so appealing on so many levels. Smaller government, lower taxes, you know, individual. That's very appealing to people. They never really implemented it, and it really doesn't address some of these major issues we have. But you understand when you say they, you're kind of saying, like, people are defective. They have some defective biology or brains, and that's what they kind of, I'm not accusing. Be careful. I'm not accusing Janine Garofalo of employing tactics like that, because maybe she was just joking. But when you start to say that any other whole group of people are physically or emotionally deficient or defective or not perfect in their, you know, in their divinity, not they might be completely way off base on their politics, their understanding of it. They might have been persuaded by these demagogues and how they were. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? When we start calling each other...
You on that issue.
Okay.
On that one sentence that she said about that, I thought that was... You're right. That was over the top. But in general, I do believe that the Republican Party leadership... not all of them even, but I think that that's where they're trying to take their party. They are obviously coalescing around the worst elements among us as people. You know, in that racist type of thing, in every issue from immigration to homeland security and the other kind of a mentality, you know. And the guy that called in, I think his name was John.
Yeah.
And he said that how dare she say that it was mostly white? Well, we all thought it was mostly white. And
I don't think his point was that it was mostly white. He would say, if you look at the how many African Americans vote Democrat, I think he's saying it's true that the Republicans are mostly white. And I think that is true. If you look at the voters and break them down, that's true. But that doesn't mean that either of them, white or black, that it comes from a hatred of the other person, why they're drawn to that philosophy.
But he said it didn't. He said that it was insulting to accuse basically minorities of being mostly Democrats, when actually that's a fact.
Well, you're right. That is true. I mean, if you look at the numbers, they mostly are Democrats. But
you know, so I mean, I think, and that's a huge policy issue, and just like they hugely voted for Clinton. And they usually vote for mostly all the Democratic representatives in their local areas. I think that he was trying to insult them and connect them to Obama in some way which had to do with race, and I don't think it was at all.
Well, listen, Janine, I'm out of time. I appreciate you calling. We really do want to hear all your views. So thank you so much for calling in. 1-888-64-NANCY. If you're on the line, hang on the line. Because I think, I've got this cut of President Obama being asked about the race question, which I find interesting. Given a lot of the feedback I have about why I don't spend more time on race, our president doesn't spend time on race. but we'll be talking about that. And Janine, if you're on the line, some people think she's completely right. That's your opinion. I'm going to give you your chance. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-646-2629 on the Nancy Skinner Show. Anytime I need to see a face, I just close my eyes, and I'm taken to a place where your grip don't mind. A magenta feeling, take up shelter in the face of my spine, just like a cheek of cherry cola. I don't need to try to explain, I'd be so dumb tired, and if it happens again, I'ma move so silently to the arms and the lips and the face. Oh, I wish that thing will make you burn.
Take a country like Venezuela. I have great differences with Hugo Chavez on matters of economic policy and matters of foreign policy. His rhetoric directed at the United States has been inflammatory. There have been instances in which we've seen Venezuela interfere with some of the countries that surround Venezuela in ways that I think are a source of concern. On the other hand, Venezuela is a country whose defense budget is probably 1/600th of the United States. They own Citgo. It's unlikely that as a consequence of me shaking hands or having a polite conversation with Mr. Chavez that we are endangering the strategic interests of the United States. I don't think anybody can find any evidence that that would do so. Even within this imaginative crowd, I think you would be hard-pressed to paint a scenario in which U.S. interests would be damaged as a consequence of us having a more constructive relationship with Venezuela. So, you know, if the question, Dan, is how does this play politically, I don't know. One of the benefits of my campaign and how I've been trying to operate as president is I don't worry about the politics. I try to figure out what's right in terms of American interests. And
that's what he focuses on. That was President Obama over the weekend in Trinidad, actually doing a press conference talking about everybody. Oh, we're going to get into this a little bit. Up in arms, how dare he shake Hugo Chavez's hand and accept a book from him? What? This is going to hurt American interests. And I think there was a similar point to be made here on the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64-NANCY or 1-888-646-2629. It made me think, you know, he's got a point. There is nothing to be gained by doing to them what we're doing to us, as evidenced by that email from Rick in Albuquerque. Because I just didn't go for it and just go over the top and say, you know, and I've already given my cogent reasons why I think the whole stupid thing was a sham. It's not like I'm saying they're right on any of these issues of substance. But just to step back and show people some, not vilify them in the same way, because Obama is talking to the people of Venezuela, the people of Mexico, people of Latin America on that trip, and when he did his European tour, when he was willing to sit down, he did the video to the people of Iran. He didn't just say, Ahmadinejad says insane things like that so that he can rally some right-wing base, so he has a base of power. This is what I thought about. Don't you literally delegitimize the crazies when you don't fall into that trap and take that bait? And you're, then all of a sudden the people are going, well, you know, it's a whole new approach. All of a sudden, Rick in Albuquerque is going to be listening to a show he would never listen to. And maybe through the debate and some arguments, we will be able to win him over and get some progress and have fun. I mean, Lord knows I like a good debate. Trust me. I didn't turn into Mother Teresa. I can get worked up, and I just always try to check it. I just try to check, like, the complete, am I being like them at the door factor? Because I just, at one, I don't think it's true. And two, I think that you know, we're not going to get anywhere doing it. So if, and I got lots of other emails. I thank you for those over the weekend. They were very thoughtful, made me think about my approach to this whole thing, and given the state of the world, yeah, I think we'll try and do that. We'll try and call it out as we see it. All right, moving along, politics and headlines of the day on the Nancy Skinner Show. sand trouble. My parents got mad at me last night, had dinner with my phone. I'm not mad. I just want to make sure you know you're a Democrat and some of those things you said. And I said, Mom, trust me. I'm trying to forge a better future. It is the Nancy Skinner Show, 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-64-6-2629. Okay, before you move on, because we are moving on, one quick email I just got that kind of makes my point on this whole thing. From Bill, he writes in, Dear William, Dear Nancy, I don't see how Janine's comments regarding Janine Garofalo, that is, regarding Republicans being defective is any different than Michael Savage's saying liberalism is a mental disorder, and he wrote a book by that title. That's my point, William. If we look at that book and go, oh my God, you know, that is insane, and then we do the same thing, and you're saying it's no different, that's my point. You are making my point. So anyways, and what it does is we lose the people in the middle, because it's the crazy people on either side that are able to drum up the Chavez down in Venezuela, or, you know, all the whack jobs on the right who want to foment hate, and it's everyone in the middle who's pretty much just trying to have a living and have a life that gets lost in that whole discussion. So, as I promised, we are moving along. John Avalon is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a Daily Beast contributor. John served as a speechwriter for former New York City mayor's Rudy Giuliani's presidential campaign before he was a columnist at the New York Sun. He's the author of Independent Nation, How Centrists Can Change American Politics. And we welcome him to the show. Hi, John.
How you doing, Nancy? Good to be with you.
Great. We're just finishing up a debate, if you care to opine. I offhandedly said I thought Janine Garofalo was over the top the other night talking about the Tea Parties. Not that I think the Tea Parties were silly, were fake, were really not grassroots, you know, weren't on target in terms of taxation or what they were meant to say, but to really sort of categorize all Republicans as racist, we minimize the effectiveness of what it is we're saying. And in ways that Glenn Beck on the other side, you know, is really sort of, I think he hurts the Republican comeback effort. Because the average people are going to look at him and go, okay, this dude is crying on TV because we've lost our guy, you know. And so he's losing a lot of, he will lose people in the middle as well. Do you have thoughts? That's not what I mean by an independent, however. I'm not suggesting that means everyone has to be independent, because I'm not, but.
But the basic impulse you're talking about, I mean, you're speaking directly from my hymnal, which is that the far left and the far right are equally insane and equally unrepresentative of the American people. And too often they hijack our political discourse and hijack and own the two political parties, and that increases the alienation, which has led to this dramatic increase in independent voters and centrist voters, leaving a lot of folks feeling politically homeless and wanting to restore a sense of balance with backbone to our politics, something we haven't seen enough of.
Yeah, and you've had a lot of defections, really, though, recently, I would say, high-profile, Scott McClellan being the White House press secretary for Bush, David Brock being one of the earliest, some of Reagan's guys. Who was his economics advisor that ended up?
David Stockman, although I think he got the short end of that stick. History, I don't think, has been too kind to David Stockman.
Well, I think he came around and said that this whole supply-side dynamic scoring thing just doesn't work. And we got 8 years of it, and it really didn't work. So maybe David Stockman, there needs to be a book written that said David Stockman was right. And then recently, Meghan McCain, who also writes for the Daily Beast, where you are writing, she's causing quite a stir. She said recently at an event at a log cabin Republican event that that the old school people are scared, she used some colorful language, of the new movement, the new right, the new young right people that are, you know, are trying to embrace gay marriage, that aren't really going on to those conservative issues that were so, so attract, like a magnet to so many people, but now the polls have changed.
Yeah, well, but I think, you know, that play to the base politics that we saw in the Bush era, I think, actually alienated more people ultimately than it gained, and that's largely what I wrote my book about. But you know, the Bush administration was fiscally liberal and socially conservative at a time when most Americans, the center, are fiscally conservative and socially liberal to libertarian. And I think what a lot of folks are talking about is the need for the Republican Party, if it's going to revive itself, is to focus on fiscal responsibility again, a quality they totally squandered when they controlled Congress and the White House, and then to restore its credibility with libertarians. And a hardcore social conservative movement gets in the way of that. You know, there was a movement not so long ago of urban Republicans that my former boss, Rudy Giuliani, who I worked with in City Hall, was a leader of, that focused on, you know, quality of life, law and order, restoring fiscal discipline, but had a necessary big tent view of the party and society, because the reality is America is essentially diverse. And too often, I think, the Republican Party in its Bush-era rush to divide us into red states and blue states seemed hostile to the essential diversity of American life. And that is what has left it on the wrong side of a generational divide, and Republicans need to come to grips with that if they are going to revive in the future.
Yeah, but we could even extend that further than letting go of some of those social issues that played so well, because even your old boss, Rudy Giuliani, during the primaries, really hit the immigration. That was one of those issues, like, well, we get out, you know, immigrant bash, a little bit of that going on.
No, he didn't. Rudy's always, if you remember what was going on, McCain and Bush got a lot of heat from the far right on pushing the immigration bill. Rudy ultimately supported and has always been very pro-immigrant. You can't be a mayor of New York without being fundamentally pro-immigrant. What I think the takeaway is on that debate is that you need to have both a carrot and a stick. You need to be able to assuage people's concerns about border security, about assimilation, but then regularize the immigrants who are here and send out the message that immigration has always been the key to America's success, and it always will be. And that's the mainstream on this issue, which too often gets lost in this artificial divide where the debate gets hijacked by the extremes that don't represent reality or the American people.
Okay, let me give you another great example where I think there could be some movement in that situation. Healthcare. So the positions heretofore have been Harry and Louise ads. We don't want the government involved at all. It should be free market. Well, clearly, John, the free market has not served 47 million Americans, nor the rest of those who have insurance, because they pay for it, you know. And then on the left, or on the far left, I suppose it was, you know, we've got to have single-payer universal. So we've had no progress, and both sides have rallied on the very strong talking points to their bases on that. Isn't there an idea? I see an article in Political today, GOP stumping in healthcare fight, that they don't really have any good new ideas on the table to make them relevant.
Well, and that's what's important to get covered is, you know, you want to move the country not left to right, but forward. And as you've said, you know, this old debate has always been blocked effectively by activists on either side who want absolutism. And you know, that was true when Jimmy Carter and Harry Truman started talking about health care reform, even before Bill Clinton and this later iteration. I think Republicans do have ideas they can advance, because I don't think most Americans want anything approaching single payer or government control. What you can do is try to incentivize and expand individual ownership of health care. Making it tax deductible is one way to do that, so that folks don't have this tax that they're forced to pay out of pocket to get basic health care, when most people really just want catastrophic, especially young people. That is one of the key things, and it can be a really constructive debate if people are open to solutions from the center, instead of having this debate driven and controlled by the extremes, and that will lead precisely nowhere, as it has in the past.
Well, I think President Obama pretty much is coming from the center on this one. He's saying if you have health insurance, you don't have to give that up. If you have the Gold Cross, Blue Cross care plan and you don't want to give that up, you don't have to. But for those other people, we're going to let you buy into Medicare and have an affordable premium. Isn't that the center right there?
I think it could be, but the devil is in the details. A lot of folks see that as a slippery slope. What would be more impressive, and here's where the Obama administration can strengthen its centrist policy credentials, is start deploying the carrot and the stick. I think to push through a health care reform, there's an opportunity to build a broader coalition by pairing it with tort reform and medical malpractice reform to bring down insurance premiums for doctors as well as patients, and control the costs associated with health care, so much of which are simply not productive. If the Obama administration can put forward tort reform to balance with health care reform, that would be a potent carrot and stick combination that would appeal to the vast majority of Americans in the center, in my opinion.
Well, you know, there may have to be some unique pairing on that. Finally, cap and trade. Again, market-based solution to what, you know, a climate crisis should be like an easy sailing through, right?
Well, I don't think anything's an easy sailing through. A lot of folks on the right forget that John McCain backed cap and trade. But we need to keep in mind that, you know, cap and trade could result in increased energy prices, likely will. for folks in the short run in a time of an economic recession. I think what you want to do instead of necessarily taking that approach is really prioritize a move towards energy independence, everything on the table, and that is not just wind and solar, but also it's massively expanding nuclear power and other carbon-reduced forms to really move America all hands on tech, on deck, not one hand tied behind your back. Let's get ourselves off this addiction to foreign oil that just props up dictators and feeds money to terrorists.
Well, we can both agree on that for sure. And lots of good reasons, joint reasons to get some progress on that. John Avalon is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and a Rudy Giuliani guy. Is he a good guy? Is he just like fun to hang with?
He's a very good guy. I had the privilege of working with him in City Hall, and he helped turn around my hometown, and there's a lot of people can learn from him.
Yeah, he's a little quirky, though, isn't he?
He's a great guy.
All right. I know you wouldn't say it. John Avalon, thanks so much. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. More in the political world, headlines and developments over the weekend. When we come back, 1-888-64-NANCY, that's 1-888-2629. Yeah, I can remember that. The actual number to the show, even though they're all the same.
Country like Venezuela. I have great differences with Hugo Chavez on matters of economic policy and matters of foreign policy. His rhetoric directed at the United States has been inflammatory. There have been instances in which we've seen Venezuela interfere with some of the countries that surround Venezuela in ways that I think are a source of concern. On the other hand, Venezuela is a country whose defense budget is probably 1/600th of the United States. They own Citgo. It's unlikely that as a consequence of me shaking hands or having a polite conversation with Mr. Chavez, that we are endangering the strategic interests of the United States. I don't think anybody can find any evidence that that would do so. Even within this imaginative crowd, I think you would be hard-pressed to paint a scenario in which U.S. interests would be damaged as a consequence of us having a more constructive relationship with Venezuela. So, if the question, Dan, is how does this play politically, I don't know. One of the benefits of my campaign and how I've been trying to operate as president is I don't worry about the politics. I try to figure out what's right in terms of American interests. And
how did the politics play with President Obama shaking Hugo Chavez's hand? Well, not so good. Oh, my goodness. They are all over him. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64-NANCY or 1-888-646-2629. Political article. I mean, you know, you saw a lot of the right-wing attacks over the weekend about how could he do this given all the outrageous violations of democracy and outrageous things that Chavez has said about our country. You know, how doesn't he diminish our country when he shakes the hand of this guy? Apparently, it was Hugo Chavez who came up to Bush at this summit, handed him a book about the repression of Latin America, which I haven't read that book. I have no idea what it is. But I have read a book about the CIA involvement in a lot of the Reagan and Bush 1 years, and it really wasn't pretty. So I don't know what that book is. It's risen up to number 14 in the New York Times bestseller list, however. And he shook his hand. And you know, big deal. But this guy, Charles Ellison, writes in Politico, under what circumstances, if any, should a U.S. president avoid or refuse a handshake with a foreign leader? That he says there appears to be a double standard here in the outrage over the handshake. Few appear to have problems with previous American presidents shaking hands, meeting with notorious dictators from Stalin to Mao. Despite clear and present examples of repression in modern Russia, it's been made of, or President Bush frequently buddied up and looked into the eye and soul of Vladimir Putin. So all of a sudden, because he shook Chavez's hand, everyone's freaking out and he's undermining our country. And I think he was really cogent when he said, under what circumstance, this is a tiny little country, does me shaking somebody's hand endanger our national security? So that's the question. Under what circumstances, if any, should a U.S. president avoid or refuse a handshake with a foreign leader? Gets to a lot of important things, and he's taking a lot of heat for that. I think, if anything, it's going to open up the hearts and minds of some of the Venezuelan people. But they're after him. You knew that would happen, right? We saw that one coming. That was easy to spot. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. And the Nancy Skinner Show. Shook his hand and took his book. And that's about it. In an effort to try and get some better relations with a country that produces, I think, I don't know the rankings per se anymore, but one of our largest oil exporters, importers to the United States, Hugo Chavez. President Obama coming under serious fire from Newt Gingrich. We'll get that audio to you shortly. Saying, you should have never shaken his hand. What comes first, the handshake and the diplomatic action, or the, making Chavez do everything we want him to do, or Cuba for that matter? They're all over him because he's altered Cuba policy, which he says hasn't worked in the last 50 years. Or they're also mad at him because he bowed to the Saudi king. If these small gestures, folks, end up resulting in massive policy changes with entrenched interests, is this like, you know, to me it's the cloak of testosterone. Take it off for a little bit. If we get better results, isn't that the end of the story? Isn't that what we're looking for? And isn't the president a bigger man for trying to break down what has not been working? So that's the question to you. When is it unacceptable to never shake a hand with the president? 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. All right, I'm going to get to your calls. Let's see. Charles is up first in Los Angeles. Hi, Charles.
Yes. Well, considering Newt's, the way he treated his past wives, I don't think he should be giving advice to anybody on whose hand they should shake. With Obama.
That he did what?
he walked down on two of his past wives. So for him to give advice on who Obama's hand he should, how Obama should address anybody or shake their hand or not, I don't think Newt's the one that should be giving people advice on how to treat other people.
Yeah, he wants to be president, though.
Yeah, he does. But if you look at Chavez, when we had the runaway oil prices, Chavez actually provided low-cost heating oil to people in New England, in this country.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right? And then when Katrina hit, he was ready to get aid and relief before George Bush was. So there are some good things that Chavez has done in his past. Bush tried to overthrow Chavez, funded people that wanted to, that tried to overthrow his government. So, yeah, there's some animosity between those two.
Yeah.
So I don't see anything wrong with Obama shaking his hand. I don't see what that's a big deal. You know, if he, let's say Obama didn't shake his hand because he was afraid of what some right-wing ringer would say. Well, that would be a true sign of weakness.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a sign of strength that he has the ability to do that without committing. And what they're saying in these articles is someone saying, well, once you shake someone's hand, that's a sign of acceptance and agreement. No, it's not. It's an opening gesture.
That's all it is. I think relations are going to improve with Obama, not only with Venezuela, but a lot of other countries in around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks, Charles. I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, Nancy?
Yes.
I wanted to address that call. He said something about black people voting Democrats.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's gone on because Lyndon Johnson, a Southern Democrat, upheld our constitutional right to vote when he passed the Voting Rights Act in 65. And then if you look at most of the policies, you compare them, Democrats to Republicans, hey, if you're making less than $250,000 a year, you're probably going to tend to vote Democrat.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And plus, most black people voted for Clinton, and last time I checked, he wasn't black. With Kerry, and the same thing with the other parties.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Charles, that it doesn't matter. That number doesn't change because of the race of the president. That is just the way it is because of policies.
Most of the people that voted for Obama were not black. So he was able to reach a whole cross-section of people, and that's why he's president.
Great point. Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it. Okay. 1-888-64-NANCY, that's 646-2629. Let's move on to Scott in Long Beach. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Nancy. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Great. Hey, listen, I was just...
Oh, no. Oops, Scott, I'm sorry I accidentally hung up on you there, buddy. My bad. My button popped off on my phone, and I went to put it back on and hung up on you. I liked your comment, so call back in. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 646-2629. We will move along to Alan in Beverly Hills in the meantime. Hi, Alan.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
Listen, the head of the Soviet Union, Nikita Khrushchev, at the United Nations said that he was going to bury America. But President Richard Nixon went and sat and he visited him, he talked to him. The same thing, President Nixon went to Communist China, our enemy at the time, and Nixon went and sat down with Chou En-lai and Mao Zedong. This criticism by the Republicans, they don't know what to talk about. So they're just going to criticize. It is irresponsible. It's just they are just, I consider them our political enemy. They have nothing to say. And the young gentleman
also... Alan, the first part of your statement was right on the money. Look at all these, consider all these people that we heretofore considered our enemy. We sat down with them, and then you ended your statement by saying, those guys are our enemy. So maybe, taking a step further, we should be sitting down with them. You know what I'm saying? You just essentially flipped. You said they were wrong to criticize the president for meeting with our enemies, and they're our enemies.
Because what I want as a Democrat is not what the Republicans want, and what the Republicans want is not what I want. You know, as far as health care, you had this young man talking about the same mantra. I've been hearing it for decades. We won't get a health care system covering all Americans, like just about every country in the world does, unless you have basically a single-payer system modified, you might say. And we'll never get it unless we do that. He talks about being free from oil, and brings up the nuclear, with the nuclear waste. And where do we put it? You know, if we want to get free, there's policies, and I believe you find it with the Democrat Party, to solve these problems, not with the Republicans.
All right, thanks a lot. We appreciate you weighing in there, Alan. Okay. Let's see. We'll go back to Anaheim and get Louie in this conversation. Hi, Louie. What do you think? When is it unacceptable to shake someone's hand?
You know, I am from the Middle East. Even Arabs and Jews shake hands nowadays. I think the conservatives here are going nuts. These people they need the psychologists. I'm serious. I think the Democrats need to hire psychologists to deal with these people. They're full of, they turn religions upside down, and they just hate anyone with a D in front of their name. I think, you know, I live in a very conservative county, Orange County, California. conservatives are good, but the thing is, they're some misinformed. They have been used by Bush and his cronies. These people don't know the good guys from the bad guys. We just need to be very patient with them, and we don't know how long it's going to take to educate these people.
But we won this election by enormous and overwhelming numbers. And there were independent voters, and there were Republicans who voted for, I know so many Republicans who voted for Obama. So are you not focusing on, like, those people who will never change? Isn't it President Obama's approval rate is 66%, even despite Newt Gingrich and this and that. So do we over-focus on the crazies a little bit too much here? Louis?
You know, the thing is, the conservatives all over the world, they have different ideologies. Conservatives here in the United States, they hate conservatives in the Middle East because they're two different religions. I mean, liberals love everybody. Liberals love each other. They have no ideology. They just want peace. They want to get along. I mean, conservatives are sick, retarded people. I'm telling you, Middle East people, the conservatives in the Middle East are much worse than the conservatives here. They don't.
All right, but you just said conservatives are sick, retarded people. Now that. How is that constructive one bit in any ongoing conversation if we're going to actually get anything? Because not all conservatives are. Maybe there are some people who. And here's my personal view. Newt Gingrich, a lot of these guys, the leaders of the movement, they understand that they're manipulating people. They understand it, and they're doing it for their own personal advancement and power.
Well,
but the average person who just likes, you know, when you tell them, you want big government or you want small government, they'll say small government. You want bigger taxes or smaller taxes? So that person could be described as a conservative. Does that make him sick and mentally retarded? Or did he buy into a philosophy that looks attractive on the surface, but yet they don't understand its implications and workings? And these guys have been so good at spinning it and how effective it's been, they tend to believe that they're right, and it's just we haven't had a chance to do it.
You're absolutely right. Conservatives are good people.
Oh, wait, hold on. There you go. Uh-huh.
You know, they take religions and they turn religions upside down. You know, I happen to be a Christian. I am not religious, but the Muslims in the Middle East, they have so much in common with the Christians here. I mean, they hate gays. They hate anyone with a different religion. They just can't stand each other's ideologies. I see so much alike between the Muslims and the Christians, especially the evangelical. I don't know what they're from the Midwest. These people are so lost. You know, if we just keep saying that they're bad, they're evil, they're going to get much worse. We need to hire some psychologists to deal with these people.
Louis, I mean, again, to me, that's, you know, that is not how you're going to get some change hearts and minds, is to say that they have some mental illness. It's the same thing, because it's not. Look at Meghan McCain, who's at a gay group saying that this is a younger generation, more educated. She considers herself a conservative or Republican, and she's not mentally retarded. She's trying to reach out and change her party. We should help them. And I think if we say you are so mental that you need a shrink, that is not a really good open. If Obama shakes Chavez's hand and respects his basic humanity, then we need to do the same thing. And saying you are so deranged that you need to be institutionalized or have some therapy. And I know you didn't say institutionalized, but whatever. Sending that message isn't the same opening gesture shaking someone's hand and taking a book, which is like starting the dialogue. So, think about that. More of your calls coming up. I got the Newt Gingrich take on the Chavez handshake. Just for fun. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. I'm the Nancy Skinner Show.
Good morning, Marta.
What do you take away from the president's visit to Latin America? What do you think his goals were, and in your estimation, was it a successful trip?
Well, I think, first of all, the importance of the Chavez smile and handshake is illustrated by your report just now on the jump in the book sales from number 54,000 to number 2. Everywhere in Latin America, enemies of America are going to use the picture of Chavez smiling and being with the president as proof that Chavez is now legitimate, that he's acceptable. He is a dictatorial figure. He is an anti-American figure. But what I find distressing is that this administration is opposed to looking for oil offshore, but the president bows to the Saudi king. The president is friends with Venezuela, whose biggest impact on us is that they sell us a lot of oil. And I just think that there's a shallowness about how they analyze things. It does matter to the world if the United States tolerates a vicious anti-American propaganda campaign and then smiles and greets the person who's systematically been anti-American for his entire career.
But you heard what the president said, that he did not believe that shaking the man's hand will endanger the strategic interests of the United States. So you disagree with that?
No, first of all, I think stopping us from drilling for oil endangers our strategic interests. But I think symbolically, we've had weakness in the last 2 weeks with North Korea. We have weakness with Iran. We have bowing to the Saudi king. We have weakness with Hamas. We have weakness with Cuba. And Cubans have not released a single political prisoner. And I think we have to recognize if the administration wants to look at facts, that the record is even worse than the smiles and the handshakes.
But do you think he should not?
If you want to look at facts, Newt, how well has that Cuba policy worked out there for the last 50 years? How well has your big idea been working out in all of these with all these tin pack dictators? Not so well. It's funny that that's what we're talking about in the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64-Nancy. That's 1-888-646-2629. Everyone's all up in arms because he shook hands with Hugo Chavez. Yet, you know, history's rife with enemies sitting down to reach out to the peoples beyond them, perhaps, and effect change. And that we should show strength with Cuba. Well, that's kind of what we've been doing. I mean, we tried the invasion thing. Didn't work out so well. So then the isolation thing didn't work out so well. So how about just trying to do something that, you know, that is the definition of idiocy, is it not? Doing the same thing over and over again and thinking it's going to work, or insanity. I stand corrected. Greg is in Los Angeles. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hi, Nancy. What about the idea of shaming people whose breathtaking stupidity and deviousness brought the entire world economy to ruin? Our country is responsible for that. Are you saying that in any other country, Nancy, people who are so stunningly stupid, about a third of our population, ignorant rednecks, that they allowed themselves to be played like this by the dirtiest right-wing tricksters, many of them from the original Nixon squad, they would be shamed into silence. But we're supposed to, because we're liberal, we're supposed to be kind and understanding of that level.
Now, you're talking about, let me get just clear where you're going here. Are you talking about Chavez?
No, I'm talking about the original discussion you had, you started out the program on today, about shouldn't we be more generous to these people than calling them mentally ill? John Dean's book, by the way, I'm surprised you haven't read it, is definitive about who these people are and what they have to offer the country, and it's ruin, and they will not stop until they've completed the ruin. They're almost there.
But you know what? They're out of power completely. Of course, we have to pick up the pieces. And Greg, stop getting me wrong here. Listen, I was out there before the war in Iraq on the radio saying this is a big mistake. At the time, it's just, all right, I'll tell you what, Oprah Winfrey just pulled a show off. She was going to do a show on Columbine. And she it was all produced and everything. She just pulled it. She said, I think it focuses too much attention on the killers. And she doesn't want to feed it. So I think my view in this is not that I haven't called them out on the carpet for every bad policy, especially the economic policies for all these years, Glass-Steagall, you know, repealing all those things. But what good does it do? Just like with what Obama was saying, what good does it, if he had pointed his finger and said, didn't shake his hand, that what good would that do? Because these are the leaders that are doing this, are the leaders of the conservative, like the Newts and these guys. It is not, you called all of the people that follow them rednecks.
Well, listen.
No, not everyone who follows them is a redneck. There are plenty. John Krieger, my producer, considers himself a Republican. I wouldn't consider him a redneck. I mean, I think that you only do yourself harm when you start to label people like that. Because, you know, that you're not going to, they may think it's cooler to be Republican. There are a lot of reasons why people may think that that's the better party. And they're not all rednecks. They're not all having limbic brain issues. And I don't believe you believe that, Greg.
Nancy, welcome to the new Republican Party. It is the party of NASCAR. It's the party of willful ignorance, of the redneck baboon. This is what they have to offer America now. They're not interested in the former conservatives.
What are they interested in? What do you think they're
interested in promoting their hate and completing their ruin. They've almost brought it to ruin. They've just about accomplished
it. And they want to just ruin the country. That's it.
Oh, absolutely. In the world economy, they wrecked the world. They brought down...
You don't think that that was just called greed caught run amok?
And people, in any other country, again, Nancy, people... Breathtakingly stupid. Shamed into silence.
I am out of time, Greg. I'm sorry about that. We're going to have Governor Howard Dean coming up to talk about health care. I will wrap up on this and say that Obama got elected, and he never called anybody a redneck. He got white people to vote for him. He reached across the aisle. He didn't play this, they're mentally deficient, all of them card, folks. And he got more votes than any American in history, and he's solving the world's problems. I think on that, I must rest my case. Governor Howard Dean is back at work. Well, he's been kind of out there. I've seen him out there, but he's out there working on the health care, leading. Someone must emerge in all this chaos and confusion to deal with an issue like health care, the monster that it is. And Governor Howard Dean, former chair of the Democratic National Committee, is leading that effort. We always love speaking to Governor Dean, and I saw you on Hardball the other night, Governor, and you did a great job.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
In that silly environment where the questions, you're looking for some deep question about how to overcome these major political divides and solve an issue that's important to people, and it just turns into a silly food fight often.
It depends who you have on.
Yeah. Yeah. Who were you on with the other night?
I don't even remember. You know, I think it was the Republican lobbyist.
Or the one, the former Bush aide, in any case, talking about health care. So we've had your brother on, and when you had your house parties on the eve of that to get people going to the house parties. How were they?
They were very, very successful. I think there's a real hunger for activists to continue to being activists, and I think they really want to see delivery on the things that the president said were going to be delivered. So, I think he's done a good job, but I think he needs a lot of shoring up because it's tough in Washington to get stuff done.
Oh, yeah. So we've just been talking about the silly season of politics. Spend more time talking about a handshake with Chavez than some of the issues that are right there about ready to knock us out. So healthcare is one of those issues. I've heard some word. I know that this is something that you feel strongly about, given your background, is that it has to be a ground-up, bottom-up movement to get the support that we need. But you still have to deal with the... We've been lamenting the breakdown even among Democrats, the conservative Dems who don't think this is the right time to tackle. We got to get the economy right first, and then...
Well, the economy's not going to get right unless we do health care. Look, one of the problems in this country is that we have an employer-based health care system. And while that's worked reasonably well for a long period of time, it's finally unraveling the economy. Health care goes up at 2 to 3 times the rate of inflation. That means that General Motors and the steel companies and Caterpillar Tractor and all these companies, they're healthcare companies. They spend more money on healthcare than they do on steel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't have a competitive economic system with all the other industrialized democracies that have a health insurance plan that's not run through an employer base, if you're going to saddle our companies with that, not to mention our small businesses, which are really snookered by this stuff. So we've really got to change the system. The president's got a great plan to change the system. And, you know, the Democrats and the Congress have got to line up behind that plan.
You know, it seems to me that the situation with the automakers and the urgency, perhaps it's your hook, if you will, that right now, Governor, I don't know how closely you're following the automotive situation, but May 1st is the deadline for Chrysler and June 1st for GM. And if they don't come to terms, Chrysler is a little more difficult because they have their debtors are secured. But if they don't come to terms, there's a trigger effect. If Chrysler goes down in 2 weeks, they could take out several suppliers, which have a cascading effect, taking out potentially Ford and GM. I mean, this is catastrophic. And you are right, sir, that health care is one of those legacy costs that is such a big problem in the negotiations. Has anyone done any out-of-the-box thinking about using that, taking that obligation as in the group of the benefits, the Viva Fund, and saying, okay, what we will do as the government is we can absorb that as part of the as part of the kickoff, if you will, to allowing folks to use Medicare?
I think that would very much happen. That's exactly what would happen. Is the legacy costs from the automobile companies would be transferred, not entirely, but in large part to the government. And that would function as a way of getting our system back in the same position, for example, as Canada and England and Germany, all the countries that we have to compete with, and Japan. You know, we're not competing with China in terms of automobiles. We're competing with Japan, Germany, Britain, France, Canada, and they all have health care systems where their businesses don't have to pay for their health care. They pay a little more in taxes, but nothing like what it would be, like what they pay in the States because of the health care costs. It's just a no-brainer. We've got to do it, and we've got to do it now. And I give President Obama a lot of credit for figuring out this has just as much to do with the economy as fixing the banks.
Yeah, I wonder if his auto task force has really broached the subject of using crisis is opportunity, as you know, we talk about a lot. That here that's the big problem I talked about last week. The pension liabilities alone. If let's say everyone says let them go, a lot of sentiment right now, Governor, is you know what they made mistakes. Let them go bankrupt. And I'll tell you what, you've got a $20 billion pension liability. People who have already retired that GMOs. The government said they could only assume $6 billion of that with their Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And with Chrysler, it's like $9 billion, and the government will take $2 billion. What are these people supposed to do? I mean, they're retired, and this is their pension and their health care. So is this, I understand that this has to be the longer-term solution, but what I'm suggesting is there a way to use this to force, do a cram down, if you will, of moving health care onto the agenda immediately and putting these people out as the first test case? We're just going to shift them into whatever this program. And if you will, Governor, tell us what the program looks like. What is the plan for people who...
I think, Nancy, the program looks like Medicare. Look, Medicare, Republicans keep croaking about socialized medicine. We got socialized medicine, if that's what they call it, for 40 years to people who are seniors. And it's worked great. It's not perfect. It is bureaucratic, but it's not more bureaucratic than private health insurance, and it's a lot cheaper than private health insurance. 96% of all the dollars that are spent on Medicare go into medicine. About 80% with the really good health insurance companies get spent on medicine, and in some cases it's 50% because of shareholders return on equity, big executive salaries, advertising, all the things that Medicare doesn't have to do. So that's what the plan looks like. It looks like a private health insurance, a public health insurance entity that you can sign up for if you like. If you like. Nobody has to give up what they already have if they don't want to. But
that's the beauty of it, I think, politically, is that...
The insurance companies and congressmen and politicians don't get to decide for the American people what they want. They simply give the American people options and the people can choose. And right now, the health insurance industry and the Republicans are trying to stop you from getting those options. And if they succeed, you're guaranteed that people are going to get screwed in the bankruptcy of the automobile industry.
Yeah, but it'll eventually land on the taxpayers' agenda, I think. Now, would there be a premium for this?
Everybody, you're going to have to pay something unless you're destitute. You know, you shouldn't, and I don't think you should get something for nothing.
Right.
This isn't free health care. And it shouldn't be free health care, but it's affordable health care.
And I think that because of the pool of interests are so large of people uninsured, the risks go down. It's cheaper to provide it. They have much lower administrative costs than the private sector. The big fear, is it not? And didn't someone just slip on this, Governor, and said the big fear is it's going to be more attractive than private plans and people
won't. Well, that's the big fear, but I don't think there's a constitutional right to be inefficient and deliver crummy services to the taxpayers. And that's what essentially what the private insurance argument is. Wait a minute, we have a right to be inefficient. Well, you may have a right to be inefficient, but not at the expense of the American people. Let the American people decide what they want for health insurance and give them the option that everybody else has in every other industrialized democracy in the world.
Now, is Congress on the same track that the people are? Because the people so want this just to happen. And I heard today that there are two different Senate committees that are putting a bill out in early June that are supposed to be somewhat alike. I think it's Max Baucus. I'm not sure. And then we don't even know what the House is doing. So how is Congress making the Obama plan a reality, or are they on two different planets at this point?
Well, I think that Congress, the House, is going to do probably the right thing, is my guess. Knowing the players, I think they will deliver pretty much what the president has suggested. I don't think they'll get any Republican votes, but that's nothing new.
Right, yeah.
Senate, well, I think will try to be more bipartisan. The only problem with being bipartisan is it's very hard to make compromises with people who are being unreasonable. And the Republicans simply don't want to give the American people the choice of what plan to have. And my view is let the American people decide. If they want a single payer, let them be in a single payer. If they want what they already have, they can keep it. There's no harm in private insurance, but there is harm in private insurance if that's all you can choose. And that's what this fight is really about. Let the American people choose, not the insurance companies and the lobbyists and the Republicans.
Yeah, we just had a long discussion over the last kind of couple days. Someone just suggested, you know, maybe there has to be some carrots and sticks. What about throwing in a little dose of tort reform for those conservative Dems / Republicans if they full bore support this program?
Well, that's actually pretty easy. The way it's done, the way to do it, which would satisfy both lawyers and doctors to a certain extent, is something called a comparative effectiveness review. What that means is you look at all the procedures and the drugs and see which ones work and which ones really don't work all that well. And then you basically have a standard of practice that comes out of the information. If you adhere to the standard of practice, then that's an absolute defense in a malpractice case. If you don't, well, then malpractice is fair to take up a malpractice action. And that's a reasonable defense, and that will lower tort costs taking away the right to get compensation if something goes wrong.
And we might pick up a few more votes. I know you're out of time, but I have one quick last question, Governor, because we've been debating this. You know, Jeanine Garofalo was on MSNBC or something and called all Republicans, what did she say, racist. And we've had this big discussion about how that's unproductive in the end, even if the other side, even if Glenn Beck is a whack job in doing it. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the debate?
I have to say that I don't think all Republicans are racist, of course, but the Republicans really are, the reasonable side of the Republican Party is underrepresented right now. They are really struggling. They've gotten very, very conservative because they don't have many Republicans left, and the ones that are left represent very, very conservative districts. They're really struggling with how they can resurrect themselves, and they aren't going to be able to do it unless, A, they can appeal to lots of different kinds of Americans, who are younger, and also to more moderate people. This next generation, this younger group, you know, this is the first election in my lifetime that where more people under 35 voted than over 65 voted. So the country has changed dramatically. And what the Republicans have got to do is retool themselves. They can't just appeal to the far right and ever expect to win any more presidential elections. They're going to have to moderate themselves. And we could use a good, moderate, thoughtful Republican Party in opposition, just like we used to have in the 60s and 70s. I think a good opposition that's thoughtful and willing to work with the majority is good for the country. But they've got a while before they can become that kind of an opposition.
Due to the wild success of the Tea Party. Not so much. Governor Howard Dean, is there something you want folks to do? Go to a website. You got a petition on this? You want?
Yep, go to standwithdrdean.com. Standwithdrdean.com. I'm back consulting with Democracy for America, my own campaign group.
Absolutely.
We're pushing this very, very hard, and we need your help. We need your signatures. We need you to get out and knock on doors. So go to the website, standwithdrdean.com, and we'll put you to work.
That's great. We'll put a link up on our website as well and get the word out, because it's about darn time.
Thanks so much.
Always great to talk to you, Governor.
All righty.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You bet. Governor Howard Dean, back, reemerging health care. You know, it's always kind of been his issue as a candidate and as chair of the DNC, and now he's out in the private sector with a DFA doing consulting. StandWithDrDean.com. Please take a moment and say, you know, voice your vote on health care, because it could be taken up in the next few months. And wouldn't that be nice? A major accomplishment after all these years? Like, some good news would be just fantastic. It would be good for the economy, I'll tell you that, too. So take a minute. It's something you can do easily. Voice, they do listen. They look at these petitions, I'll tell you that. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629 as we continue on the Nancy Skinner Show. I was kind of onto this something there. Did anyone hear that? I want your thoughts on that. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. Just had a conversation with Governor Dean, who I admire greatly. And let's keep it to the healthcare thing. You know, and I did find the letter. It's Ted Kennedy and Max Baucus who submitted a letter to President Obama saying that for nearly a year we've been working together toward the shared goal of significant reforms to our healthcare system. We must act swiftly because the cost of inaction is too high. Because their committee shared jurisdiction over healthcare reform legislation, they've jointly they're laying out a schedule, an aggressive schedule to accomplish our goal. So they're going to mark up legislation in early June, both committees. Our intention is for the legislation to be very similar and to reflect a shared approach to reform so the measures of our two committees can report out quickly and go to the Senate floor, and then, of course, would have to deal with the House floor. I'm not quite sure what the outlines are, but early June. And so it looks like they're going to plow ahead. I'm thinking what I said was, you know, if you've got these retirees, I was really shocked on Meet the Press that not a single question about the autos came up. We're 11 days out, 10 days out from this catastrophic event that will cascade, and not one question was asked. Again, David Gregory disappointed me. But the larger thing is, we talked about this with the pensions. They're going to go, the government's going to be responsible for that anyways. Instead of waiting till the companies are bankrupt and there is no ongoing concern, what if the government uses this opportunity to take all the retirees and take them off of the Viva Fund, off of the payrolls of GM and Ford, and put them into this plan that Governor Dean just outlined, this Medicare plan, where they pay premiums. Okay, they're just getting government support. This is an emergency piece of legislation to deal with the situation at the car companies and to take that off their books so that they can start making cars. But what's the side effect? The benefit is the new healthcare program has begun. There you go. Then it's not, because the problem is people, you know, that aren't old enough for Medicare right now, who are in the middle, they don't have any good options. They're going to lose their health care, and they don't have any good options. So there's your moral argument for making, just starting it, but giving them the opportunity to buy into Medicare. That's a simple piece of legislation. That's just offering them the chance to buy in and figuring out the premium structure, taking it off the books of the automakers, and voila, people, you have health care. You have public health care and private. Didn't change that. What do you think of that? I mean, isn't that sometimes you just got mother is the, what is it? Invention is the mother of all this. Yes, I know what it is. All right, so 1-888-64, Nancy is the number to the program. What do you think about that idea? I'm putting it out there. We'll be right back. not doing so well today. Banks not buying it. Or let's see, the street ain't buying it, the headline on the Washington Post. The Dow down 289 points today on concern about the banking industry's health. Some banks have been reporting some profits. I've been out there on the Nancy Skin Show. 1-888-Nancy or 1-888-64-Nancy talking a lot about this on the business television networks where I was on Friday night, yes, on Fox Business. And so the question was that the Dow has seen this incredible recovery of late. And so is this it? And all these pundits, I'll tell you, it's amazing. The Dow is the scoreboard of the football game, okay? So you got to watch the football game to see where the Dow goes because a lot of this stuff is just up and down speculation that goes on. They look at P.E. ratios. They look at what's down, what's up, and people try to buy where they think they're going to scoop up some profits. But the real Dow, the real long-term, like multi-year gains are when Main Street starts picking back up, right, and starts making things again, which is what we have to do here. So I'm just looking at this. They're worried about the stress test. Now, if you're not following this closely, what they're going to do, and we're going to hear in the next few days, President Obama said today, he gave a press conference, I got some sound from that this morning, about the economy and the deficits once again, and he's going to reveal the state of those banks, is this. They take a bank, and they look at the balance sheet and how well capitalized they are and whatnot. And then they put it through all these models to see, well, what if the GDP does this? What if it does that? Are you able to, what if the foreclosure rate goes up? And it's interesting to look at the banks because some of them have reported earnings, but their earnings, there was a change in marketing rule. Remember I told you about that on here called FASB, the Financial Accounting Standards Board, which had tightened it with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Now they've loosened it up a bit so that they don't have to value their assets at market value, which right now is nothing or bad, but they can estimate future value based on a recovery. So some of the banks are showing a recovery based on that change in accounting rules. They took some money from the government, but the market's worried about the health of the banking industry to this day. And President Obama has said many times, we're going to probably have to give them some more money, which is going to be great. Now, so here's my big idea. If in fact the banks are worried about the general economy, if that is what is dampening the shoring up of banks, and why don't we try and, you know, do this deal? I just put this deal out there and say, okay, we're going to rescue the auto companies. We are up against these deadlines. The consequences, if they don't fail, are enormous on the rest of the economy and the banks, sort of taking everyone down with them. Would you do that? Would you be happy with taking those workers who are they're going to lose their pension and health care benefits, taking them off of the health care of the companies and putting them into a Medicare plan that then opens the door as the first step to the health care bill, to the health care program for the uninsured Americans who don't have an employer-based system. So that it's almost like build it and they will come. These people need health care. The companies are going to go into bankruptcy and try and restructure, and that's one of the legacy costs they don't want to have to take with them, nor the UAW, because they can't afford it. So would you be supportive of if that group of people, because we're not going to abandon them, are we? Are we going to abandon hundreds of thousands of retired people across the country and make them fend for themselves? I don't think that's going to happen. But why not use this opportunity to say, okay, here's the deal. You're in Medicare. You're in the new Medicare program. And you don't have to be 55 years old. Because that's, as I said, that's the problem. Younger people who are losing it, they have pre-existing conditions. And take advantage of the crisis, essentially, to get health care going. You know, kill two birds. I think it's a great idea, and I think it would have such widespread public support because what are we going to do with these people anyways? We're just going to pay their health care without creating this government health care, the Medicare, allowing people who don't have health insurance So essentially, why waste a good crisis? I suppose is what I'm saying, if you really want to get to the bottom of that. There's a crisis. These people are going to go. The news, the local news reports here in Detroit, I should tell you, were not good. There were local reporters doing our local TV shows, and they said that there, no deals had been reached. Chrysler has this May 1st deadline. Their bondholders, including, you know, Chase, we talked about that, and Citigroup, they're not going to take a cut. UAW will only do it if they do it. And so it doesn't look good. This reporter, local NBC reporter, said, well, you know, we've got 10 days. What do you think? And the administration has said, well, Chrysler will go into liquidation. It's not going to be a restructuring. So you've got, you know, 10 days out, which I can't believe isn't bigger news. 10 days out, the liquidation of Chrysler Motor Company, which then could take out suppliers, which then could take out the big three automakers. In my view is, you know, you want to talk about paying attention for all these people who get mad at me about not spending enough time on an issue? Don't you think there's a lack of a time being spent on this particular issue? Hello? When it's like the meteor. You know, it's funny. I watched the movie, what was it, The Day the Earth Stood Still? It's always the crisis is what precipitates action. And so we have a crisis. This is what we should be doing, is saying, okay, these are the first people in. They are the first people in this new plan. Turn it around. What's everybody going to do? What's the Republican logic there? They're going to have tea parties and say, no, let those retirees starve. Throw them out of their houses. No, there's no political value in doing that to them. So they won't do that. And because the banks are so dependent on the overall health of the economy, I think you get the banks on board. Because if they got a little bit out of it, if they started this downward, you know, more homes will go into foreclosure, exactly their worst nightmare. So you might be able to get all these parties to the table doing the same thing. Crazy? I don't know. I don't think it's so crazy. What do you think? 1-888-64-NANCY. Otherwise, you know, we're going to see. I'm not saying that without the deal, this combined deal, that nothing's going to happen, but doesn't look good. You're looking at these stress tests and how they're going to reveal them. I know we'll hear more and talk more about that by the banks. But and there were some indicators. In fact, even my Dr. Doom, Nouriel Roubini, the guy I tell you about all the time, had an email in his newsletter this morning saying that there were some signs of hope among economists about some of the economic underlying derivative issues. Meaning, you know, some of the outlying indicators that they look at are starting to improve. But we've got a long way to go. So why not think out of the box? I mean, that's the kind of thinking I think we really need. So 1-888-64-NANCY. 10 days? No one cares. All right? I could talk about race and if we should call each other names, all you want. You prefer to talk about that. Everyone's mental, their limbic brain isn't right. That's just more important than the implosion of the manufacturing base and the effect on the economy to you? Really? Because you maybe have to do a little self-examination then. If name-calling somehow makes you feel better just because you're right and we don't get anything done and let all... You know, what's better? Vengeance? I want to talk about this tomorrow, maybe, on the CIA thing. I thought about this. What's better, vengeance or survival? Because that's the choice you're faced with right now. We could spend all our time, and I'm not saying that you don't have to have responsibility, blah, 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 but if you have to choose in a moment whether you would prefer to have vengeance or to survive that moment, what do you choose? What does a thinking person choose? Vengeance or survival? And in which order? 1-888-664-6-26-29. Oh, great. Some breaking news here. Sources say Chrysler turned down loan over executive compensation. We'll have to get to the bottom of that. As executive balked at new compensation rules, financing branch shunned $750 million federal loans, opting to use costly financing from private funds. That's not going to help their cause. Oh, my, my. The Chrysler may have to go the way of Rick Wagner. 1-888-64-NANCY. I'm just trying to think out of the box here a little bit. Banks are tanking because the economy's tanking. We got the autos on the brink. Can we think out of the box here and maybe get those retirees in the healthcare as the first new participants in the healthcare program? And that will then jumpstart the Medicare program that we've all been wanting for 20 years? Tim is in, I guess you're in Los Angeles. Hi, Tim.
How are you, Nancy? Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And calling before, but I'm calling again. Look, along the same topic, I'm a baby boomer. And correct me if I'm wrong, but in 25 years, aren't all of us boomers going to be reliant upon some form of health care, pharmaceutical, and or otherwise, in a very very increasing cost of living society with fixed incomes? But there's going to be a lot of us out there. I'm thinking that AARP is going to be the new lobby monster on the Capitol Hill. You know what I mean?
Well, it is kind of a lobby. It's a monster right now, but you are right in that eventually that's where it's going anyways. I am just saying, you know, there's such a political obstacle in getting it passed that why not if the agreement is to take these retirees of the automotive, which I think they spend $3 billion on health care. I mean, it's an enormous sum of money. Put those people, make them pay premiums. I mean, that's part of the deal. They'll have to pay a premium, but they'll get a much better program and at a lower cost to all of us, and then that jump starts the whole program.
Absolutely, yes, less than the $400, $500 a day for a single payer health payer plans which are out there now. Yeah, I agree 100%. But we got to be thinking about the next. I mean, yeah, that would have jump start today, and again, thinking ahead, planning ahead for what's coming, because it's going to be pretty gnarly, I think, out there.
Yeah, we're all going to, you know, and there's a lot of issues around that too. We're all going to be in it, and also there's a lack of nurses. There's all kinds of issues about a graying population, I assure you of that, that we need to think about. That's why I keep saying how stupid it is that we could just sit here and fight over, you know, dumb politics all the time when we've got all these big issues, more important issues to deal with. But, you know, it's fun sometimes too. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right, 1-888-64-NANCY is the number to the program. I did pose the question, I suppose. That's correct. I did say, if you had to choose, all right, your life's on the line, vengeance or survival, what do you choose? Todd had an answer to that. He wants to call in with his. Hi, Todd. Hello, Todd. Todd?
Hello?
Hi, Todd. You're on with Nancy. I'm addressing my question of vengeance versus survival, I understand.
Oh, well, you know what? I should have got my name wrong. It's Pat, actually. P-A-T, Pat.
Oh, I apologize.
That's quite all right. You know what? I guess it depends on the the situation. You know, vengeance if you don't care about anything, but survival if you still have something to live for. So, you know, yeah. That's kind of what it boils down to. But you know, I wanted to talk about something else. You know, in addition to that, I haven't heard the whole discussion about addressing and talking and dealing with with conservatives and Republican Party, but. You know, we have to also come to grips with the fact that you know, in the spirit of bipartisanship, you don't really get bipartisanship when it comes to dealing with people that really want to eliminate everything that you're fighting for. So, you know, it's difficult to work with conservatives with regard to improving health care when they really want to eliminate it. And you know, this all and you know, the average conservative doesn't understand that's kind of what their party is all about, because, you know, they've got the Brainiacs and the American Enterprise Institute and the John Birch Society and the Weekly Standard and all these people that are developing policy for the Republican Party. But you know, like I said, average conservative doesn't understand.
Well, you have, Todd, you have set me up for the exactly what I'm trying to say with this whole discussion that we've had over the couple of days, that I am not saying bipartisan, because I have been one of the people ahead of saying, hey, listen, we're going to have to cram through health care and cap and trade while we have the votes with budget conciliation. And if we don't get a single vote from them, who cares? I'm not saying right. that we have to have that watered down legislation to the point, because they won't, because they have just different priorities. What I exactly. am saying, Todd, is that when our people get out on TV and radio and start labeling all Republicans as racist and using that they're mentally deficient and whatnot, the conservatives you were just talking about, the people who are getting bamboozled, they're gonna yeah. they're gonna rally more to you know their self their politics of identity than listening to your argument. So I'm not saying do you understand the difference there? I am saying the tone of our approach has to be different, not the substance, the tone. And if we have to cram down health care and cap and trade without their votes, fine. But what we do is we just rally them. I got Lou Dobbs out here. Look at, you know, here he is. This is, now tell me we're not rallying them and giving them calls.
The liberal media just had a fit, by the way. So each and every one of you who went to one of these tea parties, thanks for doing so. I hope the next tea party, whatever it's styled as, everybody will go to, because it just for no other reason than this. The national liberal media gets so snarky it can't stand itself. Then all of these too cute by half ideologues trying to pose as some sort of objective journalist, you know, these fools start falling off their little high horses. It's fun to me. But I'm pretty sure that you're going to see a lot more snarky little nastiness coming out of the national liberal media. They can't accept that the American people, that the vast majority of Americans in this country are through with the ideological nonsense, whether it's on the left or the right, and they're sure through with the national liberal media who think, you know, they're just a heck of a lot smarter than everybody else in this country.
Okay, so, I mean, I have more of that, but do you understand? You just gave Lou Dobbs and Glenn Beck more, you know, might be good for Janine Garofalo's publicity ratings, but you gave them more to confuse the base with those people who are well-meaning people who are confused. You just gave them recruitment tools.
Unfortunately, though, you know, we don't have enough voice out there. You know yourself and other shows on Air America and these other, you know, stations and everything. But we don't have enough. They've got, you know, they're covering the landscape with Lou Dobbs and, you know, the other, you know, brain donors. And you know, here I am doing it myself. But you know, there, you know, we need to draw a distinction between those people and then the, you know, the regular people that are just buying it. You know, those people,
absolutely.
By and large, you know, they're decent people. And, you know, but you know, they hear enough of it and they begin to believe it.
That's absolutely my point. And then that way you undermine the political support for the crazies, okay? And in their approach. And you got more people signed on to doing things in the way that we believe and I believe they should be done. You got it? You got my master plan, Pat?
Right on, I'm with you.
All right. Well, thanks for calling and supporting me. I got lots more emails tomorrow we'll read. And that's my point. I'm making a distinction, which is often not done these days. All right, lots coming up this week. Going to be a big week, obviously. Every week is these weeks. Huh? Hopefully things will get better pretty soon. But I will be back on the Nancy Skinner Show tomorrow.